The Moving Finger by Agatha Christie. Read by James Saxon. Chapter 1. When at last I was taken out of the plaster, and the doctors had pulled me about to their heart's content, and nurses had wheedled me into cautiously using my limbs, and I had been nauseated by their practically using baby talk to me, Marcus Kent told me I was to go and live in the country. Good air, quiet life, nothing to do. That's the prescription for you. That sister of yours will look after you. Eat, sleep, and imitate the vegetable kingdom as far as possible. I didn't ask him if I'd ever be able to fly again. There are questions that you don't ask because you're afraid of the answers to them. In the same way, during the last 5 months, I'd never asked if I was going to be condemned to lie on my back all my life. I was afraid of a bright, hypocritical reassurance from Sister. Come now, what a question to ask. We don't let our patients go talking in that way. So I hadn't asked. And it had been all right. I wasn't to be a helpless cripple. I could move my legs, stand on them, finally walk a few steps, and if I did feel rather like an adventurous baby learning to toddle, with wobbly knees and cotton wool soles to my feet, well, that was only weakness and disuse and would pass. Marcus Kent, who is the right kind of doctor, answered what I hadn't said. "You're going to recover completely," he said. "We weren't sure until last Tuesday when you had that final overhaul, but I can tell you so authoritatively now. But it's going to be a long business. A long and, if I may say so, a wearisome business. When it's a question of healing nerves and muscles, the brain must help the body. Any impatience, any fretting, will throw you back. And whatever you do, don't will yourself to get well quickly. Anything of that kind, and you'll find yourself back in a nursing home. You've got to take life slowly and easily. The tempo is marked legato. Not only has your body got to recover, but your nerves have been weakened by the necessity of keeping you under drugs for so long. That's why I say, go down to the country, take a house, get interested in local politics, in local scandal, in village gossip. Take an inquisitive and violent interest in your neighbours. If I may make a suggestion, go to a part of the world where you haven't got any friends scattered about. I nodded. I had already, I said, thought of that. I could think of nothing more insufferable than members of one's own gang dropping in, full of sympathy and their own affairs. But, Jerry, you're looking marvellous, isn't he? Absolutely. Darling, I must tell you, what do you think Buster has done now? No. None of that for me. Dogs are wise. They crawl away into a quiet corner and lick their wounds and do not rejoin the world until they are whole once more. So it came about that Joanna and I, sorting wildly through house agents' glowing eulogies of properties all over the British Isles, selected Little Furze, Limstock, as one of the possibles to be viewed, mainly because we'd never been to Limstock and knew no one in that neighbourhood. And when Joanna saw Little Furze, she decided at once that it was just the house we wanted. It lay about half a mile out of Limstock on the road leading up to the moors. It was a prim, low, white house, with a sloping Victorian veranda painted a faded green. It had a pleasant view over a slope of heather-covered land with the church spire of Limstock down below to the left. It had belonged to a family of maiden ladies, the Misses Barton, of whom only one was left, the youngest, Miss Emily. Miss Emily Barton was a charming little old lady who matched her house in an incredible way. In a soft, apologetic voice, she explained to Joanna that she had never let her house before, indeed would never have thought of doing so. "But you see, my dear, things are so different nowadays. Taxation, of course, and then my stocks and shares, so safe, as I always imagined, and indeed the bank manager himself recommended some of them, but they seem to be paying nothing at all these days. Foreign, of course. And really, it makes it all so difficult. One does not, I'm sure you will understand me, my dear, and not take offence, you look so kind, like the idea of letting one's house to strangers. But something must be done, and really, having seen you, I shall be quite glad to think of you being here. It needs, you know, young life. And I must confess I did shrink from the idea of having
men here.